This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. Active Skin Repair uses a molecule called hypochlorous acid, which mimics our natural immune response to cleanse, soothe irritation, reduce inflammation, and support healing. We've been loving Active Skin Repair for all the cuts and scrapes that show up in the active toddler life. Sage loves that there's both the spray version but also a cream version. He likes to get to choose which one he's going to do. He calls it the magic cream. And it's been so great for taking care of Mila's neck rash now that she's full on teething. Can we get a minute for a teething 3.5-month-old? What in the world? Active Skin Repair has thousands of 5-star reviews, and the ingredients so safe and clean, they can be used from the youngest member of the family to the oldest, keeping it simple with one soothing solution for all your family's skin health needs. Visit www.activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair, and to get 20% off your order, use code VILLAGE. That's www.activeskinrepair.com, code VILLAGE for 20% off your order.
Hey everybody, you're listening to Voices of Your Village. This is episode number 45. I received so many questions about pacifiers that I honestly just didn't know the answer to, that I reached out to a speech-language pathologist. Her name is Amanda. She's delightful. I'm obsessed with her Midwestern accent. Amanda's an SLP and owns Simply Spoken Therapy. See, I can talk about the emotional development aspect and pacifiers as a coping mechanism instead of a coping strategy. And I dove into that a little bit in our Coping Mechanisms versus Coping Strategies episode, episode number 38. However, I was getting questions about oral motor development and how it affects speech and things like that. And honestly, I didn't know all the answers. And so I reached out, found an expert, and we dove into this. However, first, I want to chat real quick about shame and guilt, because I have found in conversation with other folks that these are feelings that a lot of folks are feeling on the topic of pacifiers. I had one mom who said, well, I didn't know what else to do, so I used a pacifier. And I could tell in the way that she said it and how she said it that she felt shame, or she was feeling guilty for having done that. And to be honest, it's okay. Like, you can come back from this, and no one is doing this 100% right all the time, and no one has all the answers, and that's the whole point of this village. But also, just because you did it for so long doesn't mean you have to keep doing it. Like, once you get new information, you're allowed to change your mind. You're allowed to say, hey, I'm going to do something differently. I've learned something and this aligns with my value system, or this is what I want now. As we go through this, if you have those feelings coming up of shame or guilt or anything like that, I challenge you to work to process those so that you can hear this conversation as a space to learn and to grow, because we're genuinely not here to bring any shame or guilt to you. Would you do me a favor real quick? Would you screenshot you tuning into this episode and put it up on Instagram or on Facebook, or share a post, share it in your stories, and tag, if it's on Instagram, you can tag seed.and.so. On Facebook, feel free to tag me. You can tag Seed and Sow. And let folks know that this exists. Because guys, no one has to do this alone. And so many folks are doing it in isolation, or don't feel like they have a village of support and experts to tap into and all that jazz. And that's the whole point of Voices of Your Village, is to build your village with experts in the field of early childhood, along with other parents and teachers and caregivers in the trenches right there with you. So could you share it, please? Tag Seed and Sow. Let me know where you're coming from. I love, love, love seeing you tune in. Also, feel free to head over to Facebook and join our group. We are chatting about all the things in there, and it's kind of like a space where you get to essentially have my phone number where you can text me. People drop questions in there all the time. It's seed and sow:voicesofyourvillage. And we have other experts in the field of early childhood there to answer your questions as well. Other parents, teachers, caregivers, you name it. So come on over. All right, let's do this thing.
Welcome to Voices of Your Village, a place where parents, caregivers, teachers, and experts come to support one another on this wild ride of raising tiny humans. We combine decades of experience with the latest research to create the modern parenting village. Let's dive into honest conversation about real parenting challenges so it doesn't have to be this hard. I'm your host, sleep consultant, child development specialist, and passionate feminist, Alyssa Blass Campbell. Welcome to Voices of Your Village. Today, we are talking about pacifiers. I, in episode number 38, went into pacifiers a little bit in talking about coping strategies versus coping mechanisms. And so I don't really want to tackle it from an emotional development standpoint. To be honest, this was an episode that has sat on my back burner for a little while because it's a hot topic and it's taboo, and I don't want to bring any shame or guilt to the topic, because I think a lot of the times we're using pacifiers because we don't know what else to do in this instance, or because it's a habit that continued and we're not sure how to pull it out. And there's no shame there. The whole point of Seed and Sow and Voices of Your Village is to bring experts in the field with parents in the trenches so we can give you tools that you might not have right now. You don't have to have all the answers. And so after sitting on this for a while, I continued to get questions about it, and specific to pacifiers, not just from an emotional development standpoint, but from an oral motor development standpoint. And I just started to realize I didn't have the answers to give. I could answer it from an emotional development standpoint, but I didn't have it from the speech language perspective. So I reached out to my friend Amanda at Simply Spoken Therapy. Mm-hmm. And she is going to join us today to dive into all the questions that I didn't have the answers for. And I jotted a couple of my own too. I also put this question out to our Facebook group and got a few anecdotes and questions there. So I'm excited to dive into it, but I want you to go into this knowing that this is not coming from a place of shame. And if you are walking around with a 16-year-old with a pacifier, like, that's fine. We can tackle this still. There's no right or wrong way to go about this. And to be completely honest, I'm one of five kids, and none of us took a pacifier. My mom was like, but boy, do I wish you would have. It would have been awesome. She was like, I've tried real hard to get you to take one. So as we continue, I just wanted to kind of have that disclaimer out there for all of you. And let's welcome Amanda. Hey, Amanda.
Hi, how are you?
I'm lovely. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. I'm really kind of thrilled to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Can you share with everyone a little bit about your background and who you are?
Yeah, so I'm a speech language pathologist. I have been for the past 11 and a half-ish years. I've worked in a variety of different settings. Most of my time has been spent in the elementary school or so public school arena. Love my job there. I've also done some work in pediatric outpatients. I've done adult inpatients. And I recently started my own private practice in Kenosha, Wisconsin in 2016. And I've just been really plugging along. And my business is really focusing on, you know, helping kids, mostly kids that are ages 2 to about 15, with speech sound development, looking at social communication, language-based learning disabilities, and just really helping to create some well-rounded little humans.
I love it. I have a blog post about this, but I believe that development, tiny human development, happens in a triangle, and that there are three large components that I look at in a tiny human when I'm looking at development. And I'm looking at
the sensory system, and I'm looking at emotional development. And the last piece of that triangle for me is language development.
Yeah.
I think that if any one of those is off, we're going to see delays or challenges for these tiny humans. So I thank you for the work that you do, because it's so important. And I love the crap out of SLPs. I call on, call on you folks all the time for answers that I don't have. So thank you.
No problem.
So we're going to talk about pacifiers today.
Okay. It's a hot topic.
It is a hot topic, and it's something that a lot of people have opinions on, and I want to kind of set opinions aside and just talk about science for a minute.
For sure.
And be a resource for folks. Mm-hmm. So can you start us off by just kind of talking through oral motor development, like the palate and role of the tongue and things like that, all these things I don't know a whole lot about.
Right. So I think, like, in terms of pacifiers and where they kind of start, there's a difference between sucking and suckling. And I think a lot of people get them confused a little bit about what's the difference. So suckling is what babies do, infants. It's that primitive reflex, and it's that front to back sucking motion. That's how babies breastfeed. It's like a front to back. So they're taking the nipple in the front and they're sucking the liquid or the breast milk all the way back. And that's the exact same motion that babies use with pacifiers. That's what they use when they're taking a bottle or even a sippy cup. So those are all like that front to back motion. So the suckling is a reflex that is typically eliminated, or it starts to be eliminated between like 6 and 12 months.
Okay.
So they go from this front to back motion, and then they turn it into sucking, which is what we like think about, you know, as a baby, it's a more mature pattern.
Like we would do with a straw sort of thing?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Exactly. So instead of sucking front to back, which is suckling, then the sucking is where we take the liquid and it goes up and down. So if you think about when you put some liquid in your mouth and you close your lips and your teeth around the liquid, your tongue pushes that liquid up and back.
Okay.
So when you have something in your mouth, whether that's a pacifier, a boob, whether you have a sippy cup or your thumb, you are not able to get that really much. It really kind of delays that mature swallowing motion that sucking provides. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes total sense.
Okay.
So when you say when you have it in your mouth, it can delay it, do you mean if it's like constantly in there?
Yes.
Or because obviously we have to put like a bottle or a nipple in.
Absolutely.
Right? So. Yeah.
I think that there's a difference between using, you know, a pacifier or a kid who has like a thumb in brief moments. If it is like habitual constantly in the mouth, that can be, it could delay some of that development. Now, I will say that a lot of times, like these babies who have like the suckling reflex, that's until they're like 6 to 12 months.
Right.
And there's a lot of pros that are around having a pacifier for those infants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of research out there about the impact of SIDS, and a lot of parents want to give their babies pacifiers to, you know, help reduce the chances of SIDS. And I think that that's absolutely appropriate, and I think it's necessary. SIDS decreases, or the risk of SIDS or the chance of SIDS decreases after about 6 to 7 months. And what that pacifier is doing for those babies is it's keeping them from falling into like the deepest sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So they're constantly using this suckling reflex. And within that suckling reflex, they're not getting into these deep, deep sleeps where they could risk the chance of not waking themselves up or not breathing.
Right.
So I think that there's a lot of myths out there about, like, you know, when is a pacifier appropriate? When isn't it? I think before the age of 6 months, give your baby a pacifier. That's how they soothe. That's, you know, how they're going to comfort themselves. And there's like, it's considered a non-nutritive suck. It's sucking, but you're not taking in nutrients.
Oh, okay.
So you're not feeding. And that is really helpful for babies.
Well, I have a question for you. So you said like there can be delays.
Yes.
Why? Like what's happening in the mouth that the pacifier would get in the way of?
So after a certain age, and it's usually like around 18 months, mm-hmm. that's when kids are starting to, they're starting to develop more. So you're developing language, right. Your palate and your teeth and your dentition, all of those types of development are starting to align. And so what you want is you want your palate to expand. You want your teeth to come in straight and you want your tongue to be in its proper resting position. So I'll ask all of your listeners right now, just close your mouth and sit there. What is your tongue doing? Where is it?
It's on the back of my teeth.
Yeah. So it sits on the back of your teeth, which is called your alveolar ridge. And that's where we want tongues to sit. If you have a child who constantly puts their thumb in their mouth or has a pacifier, your tongue is not able to reach that alveolar ridge to create that really natural resting position.
Got it.
So if you have a child who's constantly having their pacifier or a thumb in their mouth and they're pushing, like it's a lot of times the thumb more so than the pacifier. It all depends on the type of pacifier you use too.
Yeah, we'll get into that. That was a question I got.
For sure. But the thumb will actually push on that alveolar ridge. And because an infant or a toddler and their palates are so pliable and malleable at this point, because they're still growing, you can literally change the shape of the roof of your mouth. Hmm. So you can push that up and your palate will become higher. The other thing is too, and I
what think, can I interrupt real quick? What effect does that have? Like, does it matter if you have a higher palate? Was like what came into my head. Mm-hmm.
So if you have a high palate, sometimes that will change the resonance of your speech sounds. Okay. It will change where your tongue has to hit certain placements to produce speech sounds.
Okay.
So if you think about like the alveolar ridge. So we use the alveolar ridge to say the T sound, the T and the D sound. Sometimes the S, some people are tippers, some are dippers. It depends on where your tongue goes for your S sound. But there's like the N and the L. Those are all sounds that are produced behind your teeth. And so if you have a higher palate, you're going to have to put your tongue in a different place. And it might be more challenging to reach a higher point. Your tongue might not be able to get there as easily or as quickly or as efficiently.
Okay.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Being back to work after maternity leave has been so good and frankly, so hard. I love what I do and I missed collaborating with my team while I was out. And it's been a tough transition. The combination of a packed schedule and still being the milk machine for Mila Bean, it's hard to juggle everything. I feel so grateful for my weekly therapy hour. Sometimes I'm just holding so much and I need a safe space to let it out and get it off my chest. I've noticed that when I don't release it, it comes out anyway, but usually in ways that aren't aligned with how I want to show up in the world. BetterHelp is such a convenient, flexible option for parents who just can't take the travel time to get to an in-person therapy visit. It's entirely online. You can show up in your jammies, always a win in my book, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and you're on your way to feeling heard. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/voices today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/voices. It's so frustrating to spend the money and effort to buy your kids clothes just to have them grow out of the size within a week or have your kids complain that they itch, pinch, or just aren't comfortable. If you're with me on this, you've got to check out Posh Peanut. Their sensitive, skin-friendly clothes are made from viscose from bamboo, stretch with your kid as they grow, and they're also made to last. Posh Peanut makes thoughtfully crafted, super cute clothing for kids and families. It is the softest thing, y'all. The design is all done in-house with different patterns, and it came in the mail and I was like, oh my gosh, I want to wear this for myself every day. Their Luxe women's pajamas and robes were all that I wanted to wear postpartum for nursing and hanging out on the couch with Mila. It helps so much that the fabric is breathable and chemical-free, which means they're delicate against Mila's sensitive skin too. And I totally get why Posh Peanut is loved by over 1 million parents. Right now, Posh Peanut is offering our listeners 20% off your first order with promo code VILLAGE. Go to poshpeanut.com/VILLAGE and use promo code VILLAGE for 20% off your first order. That's poshpeanut.com/VILLAGE, promo code VILLAGE.
And then the other thing too is it could be pushing your teeth. So if you have your thumb in your mouth, you're raising your palate, but then your teeth are also going to start creating an open bite. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, we can all like think about like a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old, and you can look at them and their teeth have like a slight curve to them. Some teeth are a little bit more, you know, bucked out is what some people consider it, but we call it an open bite. Where some teeth, you can look at those children and look at them and say like, oh, I think you might be a thumb sucker or a pacifier sucker.
Right.
And so you really want those teeth to be in an optimal position because they're also going to help you with your speech and language development too. So if you think about, you know, having, you know, sounds behind your alveolar ridge, you're also using your teeth to make certain sounds like the TH.
And that makes sense. I hadn't thought about like orthodontia from like a speech perspective.
Right. And I will say that, you know, this is for those kids that are habitual.
Mm-hmm.
They're thumb sucking. So if their hands are not busy, their thumb is in their mouth.
Right.
If they're
or the pacifier, you're like walking around
constantly in their mouth. Mm-hmm. And the other thing too about, you know, having that pacifier constantly in their mouth or the thumb is that around 18 months, you have this like explosion of language development.
It's so fun.
And it's amazing. But at the same time, it's really hard to learn how to produce appropriate speech sounds if you have a something in your mouth the whole time.
Right. It's like a roadblock.
It is a roadblock. And some kids really like, they find comfort from that sucking. And so if they find comfort from that, sometimes they're not going to want to communicate because this is way better than communicating with somebody else. And so what we want to do is we want to really make sure that we're giving kids all of the opportunities that they can have to really expand and build that language when it's like the most important years for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I have definitely used pacifiers for sure in infancy. I'm like, where is this child's pacifier? And we use them a lot at nap time still as like a comfort measure. Can you speak to that? This is one thing that personally, this was one of my questions.
Yeah.
If I have a kid who's going to nap for 2-2.5 hours, I know everyone out there is like, give me that kid. but if I have a kiddo who's going to nap for that long, I have had them in my classroom who are at least 2.
Yeah.
And they start with a pacifier. Is there, should I then remove it or do I let it go? Does it matter if for their whole nap time they have the pacifier?
So if they're 2, I would say let them start with it and then take it away.
Okay.
And see what happens. So, you know, no child, no 2-year-old is going to be the same as any other 2-year-old. Mm-hmm. So all children are a little bit different. And I want parents and caregivers to know that, you know, this is just like some tips and some tricks that you can use, but do what's best for you and your child.
Right.
I never want to tell anybody what they should or shouldn't do, but at a certain point, kids need to learn to self-soothe.
Right. And
we want them to be able to kind of lull back into sleep. So maybe one day that, you know, you lay them down for nap and you give them their pacifier and 5 minutes in when you know that they're asleep, you take it away.
Right.
And then the next day, you know, or do that for a week. And then after that, maybe after 3 minutes, you take it away and then just kind of gradually start pulling it.
Totally. Yeah. So I was, cool. That's awesome. I've also had the like Wubba Nubs where we have just, they've continued to use the animal and we've cut out the pacifier piece.
Absolutely.
Which is not a child's favorite move for the first few days, but it's usually a few days of it. And they just have a new association. I had a parent reach out who I posted, all right, I'm going to do this episode about pacifiers, almost reluctantly. I was nervous, to be honest, to dive into this topic because I don't want people to be feeling any guilt or shame around it.
They shouldn't. And
that's important to me. But so she had reached out and she was like, oh, I didn't even know this was a thing. She was like, I got it from like the emotional development standpoint. I knew that we had some work to do here, but I didn't realize from speech. And she was like, my infant, there were pacifiers throughout our house and she would just go and grab them and suck as she was playing. And so part of this, I just wanted to highlight, as I've learned from SLPs in my village, that there, it does have an effect.
It does.
And it doesn't have to be this way, essentially, right? Like, it's easier to correct things earlier on. So obviously setting like a palette up for success long-term is easier earlier on than correcting things later. Okay. So on that note, you said that not all pacifiers are essentially created equally and that there are different ones that are better or worse or whatever. What shape are we going for here in a pacifier?
Okay, so if you have an infant, I love, and I don't have any children of my own, so I haven't purchased any pacifiers for myself. Yeah. However,
you can still be an expert if you don't.
I know which ones are good. So it's the nooks that are clear, like they usually come in like a pink or a green or like a yellow or a blue, and it's a straight nipple.
The hospital ones.
Yes, you can literally put your finger in it.
I think they're called Phillips.
Okay, we're gonna go with those then.
That's like the hospital ones I'm picturing.
Yes. So those are the best ones, and like I can obviously like screenshot it and like send it to you at a later date.
Yeah, we'll link it in the we'll make sure we have the correct ones, and we'll link it in the blog post.
Yeah. So those are the best ones for infants because it creates that front to back, that suckling reflex. So you're going to suck back. Now, in terms of when you get kids that are a little bit older, so after a year of age, so there's some, what you basically want is you want a nipple that is symmetrical, or you want some sort of a symmetrical nipple for, you know, them to be suckling on. You also want to try to find one that has like holes in it. The reason like, and around like the kind of like the shield or the safety guard, the reason you want those holes and the reason that they're there is in the event that your child swallowed it or it became lodged in their mouth, there's still airflow.
Got it.
So you want to be safe about it. So I always like a symmetrical one and one that has holes in it for proper airflow.
We can link to both of these on the blog post.
We'll
snag an email from you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's so helpful.
So I always like, a straight nipple and something that's symmetrical and something that has vented airflow.
Awesome. That's very helpful. So how and when do we pull in a perfect world?
Right.
When do you pull a pacifier? I'm very curious to see if it matches up with like when I have in my classrooms, because my classrooms pacifiers have been present and kids could use them as coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
And then there came a time where we would say like, all right, we're going to move into coping strategies for this child. And I'm very curious to see if it matches up with the SLP perspective. Yeah. So let's hear it.
I always say that parents should consider starting the process around 12 months, like around a year.
That's my timeline.
Actively, like only using them at bedtime around 18 months, eliminated for sure by 2 years.
Okay, cool.
That's just kind of
in a dream world.
In a dream world, perfect scenario. And it's not always going to happen that way. So
totally.
I mean, and the other thing too, to be considerate of too, is I get a lot of kids in my clinic who have delayed language skills because of frequent ear infections. So ear infections is something that, you know, if you have frequent ear infections, you've had a couple rounds of those PE tubes, you're not going to be able to hear language. So you're not going to be able to produce it.
That makes sense.
pacifiers are notorious for kids after the age of like 1 year of kind of leading into more frequent ear infections. And the reason being is that by having this constant like sucking, what you're doing is you're opening up that it's called your eustachian tube. It's your auditory, it's in your ear and it drains your inner ear fluids.
Okay.
And you typically, like most kids, like if you think about in an airplane, that's the tube that's popping. Because you have so much pressure in your ear. So when you are yawning or when you are chewing gum, you're keeping that eustachian tube open. So with babies, if they're constantly on a pacifier, they have this unnatural eustachian tube open, like they're unnaturally open for extended periods of time. And babies have very horizontal eustachian tubes. And as we get older, they become a little bit more angled so that they can provide that drainage from that middle ear. So if you have a baby who's constantly on their pacifier or thumb sucking, they're keeping that tube open. It's a horizontal tube and they're not getting that drainage or of that kind of buildup in their ears. So they can be at risk for having more frequent ear infections, which then leads into you can't hear speech and then you're not producing it.
Very, very interesting. We, in our episode, we had, I think it was maybe episode 36, we had a chiropractor on who talked about the inner ear and ear infections and how it's related to getting adjustments and being able to have that alignment in place. Yeah. It was fascinating to
me. Everything is all connected. It really is.
Connected. well, that makes total sense from a drainage perspective. Again, hadn't thought of that. And that's awesome. So when we go to pull a pacifier, and I talked a little bit about this in my coping strategies episode, so you can dive into that as well, because from an emotional development standpoint, we don't want to just pull your coping mechanism.
No, we want to replace it.
Exactly. And I personally would like to replace it with a strategy. Again, all talked about in that episode. What's the difference between a mechanism and a strategy? Essentially, a mechanism is something that we want to be temporary. It can be like an unhealthy coping mechanism, might down the road look like something like smoking or doing something that isn't healthy for your body, but that makes you feel calm. We want to move into strategies. And I start to do that around one.
Yeah.
So if you want some hot tips on how to pull the pacifier, you can go check out episode number 38 on coping strategies. But I was very curious about the age here.
Yeah, so around one age, you should start to be mindful of how often your child is using it. Are they using a pacifier? Are they using their thumb? If given the choice, you start them with a pacifier. You can take away a pacifier. You cannot take away their thumb.
That's so hard. Like, I don't even know how you'd go about pulling a thumb. Like,
I come at it from like a positive reinforcement standpoint, where you might like set timers. And if they're like watching a show or on an iPad, those moments where most kids want to have that calming, soothing, suckling, it's usually like during downtime. So I always like try to set timers and reward them for going certain periods of time without doing it. Like, that's fantastic. Like, I'm so proud of you.
Yeah.
Or give them something like you were saying, those pacifiers that have like either like the teddy ear attached or a blanket attached, give them the blanket and let their hands be busy so that they can't put something in their mouth.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. But I like to start the process around 12 months, just being mindful of how often they're using it and when they're using it. So are they using it, you know, when they're tired and sleepy, or are they using it when they're upset? Are they using it to soothe themselves? And then trying to like be really intentional about providing them with other ways to self-soothe. So I think like around 18 months, try to limit it to only bedtime if you're still there. So around 12 months, start to like think about it. By 18 months, they should only be using it at bedtime if they're still using it at all, or naps. And parents should be going in there and taking it away if you can. And around 2 years, like most kids shouldn't need it, because not only is that suckling reflex gone by that point, but even like they should have a more mature sucking motion and sucking pattern. Mm-hmm. And so having that in their mouth and kind of bringing them back to that primitive reflex for extended periods of time is really going to delay the maturity of that sucking, the actual more mature swallow pattern.
So interesting. Yeah. And from the emotional development standpoint, there's more in episode 38. So I'm not going to dive into that, but I love hearing about the oral motor development and just how it's affected. Also, like, I'm sure from a speech perspective, like you touched on this, but if a kid's walking around with a pacifier in their mouth, I won't respond to kids who have a pacifier if they try to talk to me. I will ask them, I will put my hand out and say, can I have your pacifier? I can't understand your words.
Yeah.
But I can imagine that if they're constantly talking through a pacifier, that's got to affect their articulation.
Well, yeah. And articulation is all about like precision of your articulators. So it's moving your tongue or your lips or your teeth or your jaw in very specific ways. And so if you constantly are having something in your mouth that you're trying to talk around, you're limiting that movement. You're limiting your like lingual elevation. So your tongue's not elevating how it should be. You're not getting full lip closure together. So M's and P's and B's, kids aren't going to be able to produce them if they have something in their mouth. Mm-hmm. This is like the ideal time when kids are developing these fine motor skills for articulation. They're developing their language. They're communicating more. We have a huge vocabulary and sentence structure expansion around 18 months to 2 years. And this is where we want to give them all the opportunities to talk. And it's going to be challenging if they got something in their mouth the whole time.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
So if I have a client that comes in and they have a pacifier, like they're going to give that to me before we start the session and I'll give it back. But
yeah, the same in my classroom. My kids would walk in and hand it to me. And even if you had it for a nap, they would nap. They knew they had it. And then they'd wake up from nap and hand it to me. They just knew that was the expectation.
And I think it's smart because kids are smart. I mean, how many times have we seen like a baby take their pacifier, watch them on like the monitor, throw it out of their crib because they know that like you'll come in and help them get it. But at the end of the day, kids need to learn to kind of be able to soothe themselves.
Right.
And we want to like really make sure that their oral structures are appropriate too. And
totally. Well, and I think from a soothing standpoint, there is, I think the biggest question that I get is just like, at what age should they be able to do X, Y, and Z? And I think it's often earlier than we think.
It is.
So yeah, by 18 months, I like to move away from coping mechanisms and into strategies. Again, more of that in episode 38. I got a question that I would like to throw at you that isn't about pacifiers, but it's related to the same thing. And I honestly, when I reach out for these questions, sometimes I get questions and I'm like, this could better fit in this other category. Yeah. And this was one where I was like, which category will this fit into? And I think it's here. It's about removing a bottle. So, and I guess I want to also know, like, what are the implications? So this parent reached out and said they have a 2.5-year-old and their 2.5-year-old all day long doesn't use a bottle, just like drinks from a cup and drinks water and whatever from a cup and is fine. But then will only take milk if it's in a bottle. The only way this child, and they were like, we've tried a cup, we've gone days without like him having milk, and he just will only take it if it's in a bottle. And so what do we do here? How do you pull, I guess my question is like, how would you go about pulling a bottle, even if it's not specific to this like instance, but how would you go about pulling a bottle? And at what age should we maybe not be doing a bottle, and should we be switching to something else?
Okay. So if it's, if the child is 2.5, at this point, milk in a bottle is his habit. It's his norm. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a matter of saying, oh my goodness, like there's no more bottles. I don't know where they all went. Mm-hmm. Even if you need to like, and so this will go for both pacifiers and bottles. If kids are really like wanting something out of there, snip the nipple on it, poke holes in it with like pins or needles, because then they're not going to be able to get that
sensation,
the sucking that they're used to. So snip the nipple on it, throw the nipple away. That's something that I always recommend about, you know, like when they're a little bit older. So like, you know, 18 months to 2 years, like
that
nipple, then they can't suck on it anymore. Or if you go out of town, like all of the nipples and all the bottles are gone. Oh my goodness.
Right.
At 2.5, I would imagine.
Question. Is it something like, say your kid's getting, cause I think now of like extended breastfeeding, or which is actually kind of a term I hate, which is just breastfeeding, cause there shouldn't be a time limit on it, I think. But if you, I wouldn't bat an eye at someone who was breastfeeding a 2.5-year-old, you know, part of your nighttime routine, whatever.
Right.
So I guess like, is there a limit of like, oh, if they're only doing it for this amount of time for the day, it doesn't really matter? Like, is that a...
Yeah, no, I guess like that's a good point too, because it's not like this child is probably going to, you know, daycare with a bottle full of juice.
Right, right.
You said it's only like milk and it's only at night. That might just kind of be their thing. You can even, there's different types of nipples that you can get, like four bottles that have different flows and different pressures. So as long as they're not doing like some really hard sucking, like if it's like every now and again, maybe not that big of a deal.
Right.
But if you want them off the bottle, those are some tips.
Yeah. No, cool. I just, that just like popped into my head, and all of a sudden I was like, I guess I would treat this differently if it was a nipple in the breast.
That reminds me, this is totally off topic. So Vanderpump Rules, do you ever watch it?
No.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I'm a reality TV junkie. It's a problem. it's the only drama in my life, which is fantastic because like, I don't keep it around me personally, but on Vanderpump Rules, Lala, who's one of the characters, was on vacation and she literally had a bottle with her. Now, this is like a 20-some-year-old grown woman. She had a bottle with milk and honey and she warmed it up and she laid in bed and she drank her bottle full of milk. And it was one of those moments where I was like, wait, what in the world is she doing? But I mean, that's something she does. Her teeth are just fine. Her mouth is fine. She has great speech and language skills. So I think if it's in very, you know, small, select moments, then you're fine. If you want to get rid of it, there's tips you can do. But just being mindful of, you know, how often they're doing it.
Is it more, so if they still wanted some sort of sucking, is a straw okay to use? Like if we move to like a straw cup, would that be better? You know, maybe I'm just brainstorming here. I'm not sure of all the details on what they've tried, but if an open cup isn't what they want and they want to suck, is a straw better for them?
Yes.
Okay.
So usually, you know, you can go to an open cup and then a straw. It gives you a more mature swallow pattern because you're using your lips to gain closure around either like the lid, like the edge of a cup, or like around a straw. And with a straw, you're sucking back and you're pushing it up and back, rather than with a bottle where something is like completely in your mouth. So I would recommend, you know, you can do, straws are always going to be better than a sippy cup. Those ones that have like the little like top that comes up and like the three or four little holes.
Yeah.
I would rather have kid on an open cup or a straw than on a sippy cup because it promotes that more mature swallow pattern.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's something that I actually just last year, we have an SLP that worked at the school that I was at, and she came into the room and was just like hanging out during mealtime, checking things out. And she was like, oh, do you guys move, when do you move to open cups? And I was like, oh, the next classroom. I had infant toddler mix, right? Yeah. Kiddos under one starting our classroom. And she was like, why do you go from bottle to sippy cup instead of bottle to straw cup? And I was like, but this is just what we've always done, right? Like I didn't know. And she pointed this straw thing out versus sippy cup. And I didn't know that essentially she was like, there's really no use for a sippy cup.
No, there really isn't.
And I didn't realize that.
Yeah. It's just, it's hard because like, it's an easy, like we always think like kids always had sippy cups. Like I had a sippy cup as a kid, like, you know, we see them all over. And I mean, let me tell you, if you walk your kid down the sippy cup aisle and they see one with a character on it, it's hard to get them away from that sippy cup. Like, oh my gosh, there's a Minnie Mouse sippy cup. I need that.
Right.
And I think it's just a matter of like not really knowing the difference between the different types of suckling and swallowing and a more mature swallow pattern and how it really promotes, you know, that tongue and lingual movement of anterior to posterior and up and back.
Right.
So I say like, if you can avoid a sippy cup, do it and go right to like an open cup or a straw cup where they're actually using their lips rather than having to like put it on that little like tippy tap and suck
it back. I think of us just like on the go, like we would take water cups with us. So it was easier to have sippy cups, which often we could like, you could close in some manner versus I obviously couldn't do like an open cup on the go with our little. But there are a lot of straw options that she ended up like showing us and pointing out to us just to be mindful of, like even like the Camelback.
Those are fantastic. I think sometimes that they're going to be harder for the littler kids. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of bite down a little bit too in order to suck. But they have options where like the straw part will fold over.
Right.
So that it's a little bit more sanitary. And then it can like pop up. And so, you know, you don't risk so much spilling. And it's really a nice alternative.
Yeah, no. I'm glad we touched on that in that case. Yeah. Because that was something I totally forgot about. And I just
think about sippy cups on
here. It was just something that I literally didn't realize. And there have been, this is where all of a sudden, this is why this village was created, because I have learned so much from experts in the field who have taught me things that then I can bring to parents that I wouldn't have known if I hadn't been exposed to those experts doing those things. Right. Cheers to having served hundreds of kids at this point.
Yeah,
a lot of experience in that.
Uh-huh.
Okay, cool. So is there anything else you think would be helpful for us to like leave us with information-wise?
So, you know, I was doing some research on, you know, pacifier use, thumb sucking, and pros and cons. And I know that there's some mixed research out there in terms of, you know, speech language development, but I was finding that if there's consistent use for 3+ years, kids are 3 times more likely to develop speech and language issues.
Okay, that makes sense. Consistent use, what would that look like?
So those are the kids that have it like attached to them, mm-hmm. that are running around trying to play with a pacifier in their mouth, or they're sitting sucking their thumb and they're not really like trying to talk with other kids their age. They're not like playing and kind of, you know, they always have something in their mouth.
Yeah.
And, you know, we want to make sure that kids are communicating, because there is research out there that if they miss like a lot of this developmental like growth period, it's hard to catch them up.
Right.
That's why, you know, doctors are so willing to have toddlers with those PE tubes, the pressure equalizing, because kids need to hear language. They right. need to say language. They need to, you know, use their words to communicate for a variety of purposes and functions. And if they can't hear it and they can't say it, and if it's a cause of a pacifier, or if the pacifier is kind of making the situation worse, right. then we want to make sure that we're being mindful of that and giving kids all those opportunities to be, you know, just really well adjusted. And, yeah. you know, I always tell parents, like, if you can't, you know, get rid of a pacifier, like, overnight, like, that's okay. Do it gradually. Nobody says it has to be cold turkey. There are some kids that can go cold turkey, throw it in the garbage, give it to the Binky Fairy.
Right.
Like, you know, poke holes in it, cut part of the nipple, make it harder for them, and kind of do it at your own pace. But as long as you're kind of replacing their need to soothe with something else. So,
right. like, well, that's what I was going to say. From an emotional development standpoint, please don't do it cold turkey.
Yeah.
They're using the pacifier because they don't have another tool to soothe.
Right.
And what we really want for them is to have a tool that can help them process, like, find their calm and cope. So they can process. So I love that pacifiers have served that for kids for a while. And now I just want to bring in strategies so that when the pacifier's gone, they still have a strategy to turn to.
Yeah.
And you brought it back to the triangle and saying that kids need to hear language mm-hmm. for so many reasons, for social skills, but yeah. also this is where the triangle affects emotional development. If kiddos aren't hearing our words and aren't able to communicate with us, mm-hmm. then working on emotional development is very yeah. challenging because they can't sure. understand that we are validating them. They aren't pulling in the language mm-hmm. associated with emotions. And then they aren't able to produce what they need to advocate for themselves to build their emotional development. So thank you for tying that back together. I think it's crucial. Thank you so much. Can you share with our listeners where they could connect with you?
Yes. So I'm on Instagram at Simply Spoken Therapy. I also have my website, simplyspokentherapy.com. I recently started blogging, so I've got a couple of blogs out there. I have a newsletter that I send out monthly that really gives a lot of tips and tricks around language development, speech development, things parents can do at home with just playtime with their kids. And then I have a section in there as well that really allows parents to ask me questions. I really love being able to connect with people. And part of my mission is really to let parents feel empowered that they have the skills necessary to help promote language and speech development in their kids. And so on my newsletter, I also have a section where parents can ask questions. There's no shame in asking a question. There's no stupid question. And I really enjoy hearing what people want to know.
Yeah.
Find that all on my website.
Awesome. And if we, I mean, our Facebook group, you're more than welcome to be a part of, but it's Seed and Sow and : Voices of Your Village. And the whole point of it is to we have a bunch of experts in there who are ready to answer questions that parents throw in. And it is, what's been awesome is as parents have started to like participate, I think it's really hard to be vulnerable in this group of people.
Yeah.
But as people have thrown in questions, so many other people are in that same boat and are walking that same path.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just having the courage to be the first one to ask the question. And other people can say, me too. Like, I also need this.
It's so interesting because I will occasionally post things like either like on like Instagram or on Facebook, and so many other people will DM me and they'll say like, oh my God, I was wondering the same thing. And I just want parents to know that this is a safe place, that I don't really accept any negativity in any of my platforms. And there's no question that can't be answered. And I want parents to feel empowered and confident that they can reach out, and we're all part of this community together. And like you said, it is a village.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people in the village, and we don't always have the answers all ourselves. And so let's reach out and be there to support each other.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, it was the same thing. I was getting like texts or emails or DMs that were all the same questions from people. And I was like, throw them in the group, man, because you're all asking the same question. And also then I don't have to write 10 of the same response. So come on over to the group. But you are more than welcome to join us, and people can throw. Awesome. I will invite you. But people can throw their questions then in there, and we, any speech or oral motor development questions. We also have an OT in there, and my OTs and SLPs are my core. Yeah, you guys
I
all
love OTs. So I love it. The same language.
Exactly. So come on over, but we will definitely share all the links here in the blog post and links for people to connect with you, to your website, and to your Instagram. And thank you so much, Amanda, for joining us.
Oh my God, thank you for having me.
You're so welcome.
Thanks for tuning in to Voices of Your Village. Check out the show notes for this episode and all past episodes at voicesofyourvillage.com. Did you know that we have a special community for all of you to be a part of so that we can all gather together to raise emotionally intelligent humans? Head on over to Facebook, search Seed and Sow : Voices of Your Village, and dive into that Facebook group. We cannot wait to hang out with you and collaborate on raising these tiny humans. If you're digging this podcast, head on over to Apple Podcasts, scroll down, click those stars, and leave a review. It really fills my heart to hear from all of you.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear?
Gone.
Poof.
Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working, and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of their life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking.